What I want to talk about today is actually, we all actually, in a way, Dogen put it, we all have a genjo koan, a koan of daily life, a spiritual problem we're trying to deal with. And in a way, we all have the exact same spiritual problem, which is, how can we trust what's happening to us all the time? You know, how can we be at peace with whatever conditions we're in? You know, trust ourselves, trust the what's happening in the world, trust whatever's unfolding, and realize that whatever it is, it's not a problem. It may be something to deal with, but, and that's the only way we can find real peace, is to actually be able to trust that, and to trust that you practice, because if you can't trust yourself, the center won't work, which is why you have to purify your intentions so you can, because as long as you're being selfish, you can't trust what's happening, because from a selfish point of view, bad things happen. I mean, people mistreat you. People aren't fair. People are people. But you can trust if you realize that actually everything is part of the path and everything is pointing to the Buddha. So it's like I was talking to somebody recently who was just having real, you know, horrible family, horrible problems with their children and grandchildren who were really suffering. And it was impressive to see how they were just dealing with it. This is just karma. This is just training. And not being, as much as it hurt, it wasn't disturbing them. And I was impressed that somebody could be at peace with really bad things going on. And maybe horrible things happening because the people were having not doing well with situations, and it might mean the grandchildren aren't going to do well if the parent is a mess. And the koan is whatever stops us from being wholeheartedly present and at peace with what is going on right now. You know. And you can come up with all sorts, and we all have that koan, because what? God, I don't want this, I don't want that, this is too much. You know, this pain, this problem. You know, you can just look at the news. Can you be at peace with the news? You know, peace with what our government does. And actually, it often does things that aren't good, but that's always the nature of things. I mean, it can be more or less, but you know, you look around the world, there's lots of bad governments too. You know, it's not like there's something unique going on. It doesn't mean you're being passive or you're not trying to help the situation, but it's almost like, you know, global warming. No matter what I do, you know, it'll happen, and I can be at peace with things having difficulty. You know, people making mistakes, people not doing well. And all of us are here in a way because we hear something deeper calling us. There's something deeper than just me trying to get everything the way I want it, to get the conditions the way I want it. And training is that response to that call. You know, how can I find peace? How can I find what's real? How can I not be bound by the fact that my body isn't doing well, this isn't doing well? And these things are always going on. And, you know, and how do we sit still, which is to be at peace, and not react to the difficult conditions we encounter? And part of training is how do we respond to that? And when we're not, we're getting caught up in it, how can we bring ourselves back and remind ourselves nothing is fundamentally going wrong. This is just the nature of things. Like, you know, it's like people making mistakes. Yourself making mistakes is natural. Wow, I got overwhelmed and did something wrong. But if you actually start getting in touch, there's a deeper part of you, a pure intention there that allows you to let go of the judgments of your mistakes and realizing yes, you got overwhelmed and did something wrong, but that's not your real intention. The same way as, I'll make a mistake with somebody, and I realize, well, that's not my intention. I just got overwhelmed by, the situation, by, my reaction to somebody doing something or other, making a mistake, almost like the way somebody can, you can be upset how somebody almost hits you in a car, or actually hits you in a car. I can smile. I remember somebody being so surprised when they hit me with a car, and I didn't seem to care. I just said, "You spaced out, didn't you?" And the guy says, "No." Of course, in this case, I was hit by a car where we weren't moving. I'm on 880 stuck in, and my car wasn't moving. Somebody rear-ended me. And I thought, oh, well. and I was grateful he was at least willing to pull over and exchange information, because you're always worried, in some cases where they'll just drive away. But, and the more we, looking away from suffering actually makes the suffering bind us. Mm-hmm. When we don't want to be aware of where the disharmony is, we don't want to be aware of what the self is doing, then we're actually tying ourselves up in knots, because it's still there, it still bothers you. You just like you have something that really bothers you, and you tell yourself, no, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't work. It still bothers you. You're just pushing it away. On the other hand, you have to watch what are you telling yourself? How can you have right view of the problem? So yes, this, I'm really being critical of this person. What's the right view? How can I tell myself the right thing that'll help me cure this heart by kind of, it's like, and one of Burmester's favorite teachings used to be, look with the eyes of a Buddha and see the heart of a Buddha. So it's like, how do I still look with the eyes of a Buddha so I can see, even if they're not doing, having difficulty, they have the heart of a Buddha. As Reverend Master, in fact, one of our favorite things to tell me, because I was a guest master for a very long time there, most of my time at the Abbey, she used to say, when you go to the gate, they're all Buddhas. They may be a drunk Buddha. An angry Buddha, a kind of wacky Christian Buddha, who's there to convert you. But you still treat them like a Buddha. You may not let them in the monastery, but you still treat them like a Buddha. And the more we can see where the problem is and not cling to it, the more we can see what we're doing to make a problem out of something, whatever it is, whatever you're finding difficulty, whatever's getting in the way, the more you can actually sit still and find that there's compassion, peace, and joy there, where if you don't get caught up in it. The same way as the person I'm thinking about who was describing the problem with her family, and she was saying this, still finding real joy even in the midst of the difficulty. It doesn't mean that, you can't still see the heart of a Buddha everywhere. And the solution of all our koans is, can we trust ourselves? Which means we have to get in touch with a pure intention that's there in everybody. Nobody like wakes up in the morning and say, let me be a bad person. I want to be angry today. Today let me just be greedy. Like that's my purpose today. It's like, can I eat all the leftover cake? Now, due to karma, maybe I will eat all. It wasn't my intention. Like, that's my purpose today. But the more we can trust ourselves, trust the Dharma, You know, the three refuges. Trust the Buddha. Everything's the Buddha. Trust the Dharma. There's a teaching that applies to the situation. A teaching that helps us with whatever problem it is. You know, it's just like I recently wrote in an article, like, just telling yourself nothing's really going on here. With whatever's going on, you're the one who makes this into something is going on. Other than that, it's just stuff going on. We're the one that gives it this meaning, like, oh, this shouldn't be going on. It's like, I don't want this. Almost like if I went downstairs and the bathroom was flooded and the toilet didn't work, which actually used to happen regularly when we had these days until I got a new drain line. It used to be whenever we had enough people here, the toilet wouldn't work. Too many bodily functions. So it would happen at every Vesak, my toilet would be clogged. So I solved that deep problem. On the other hand, I would just kind of deal with it. And even as somebody who's showing you the variety of human experience, he seemed to like, he really enjoyed clearing clogged toilets. And I thought, this is what makes the world work. There's actually people who delight in cleaning a clogged toilet.
Yeah.
And the nature of karma, the nature of all our past is we get caught up in things. A lot of things matter deeply to us. And this is why we're training, because we all have things that it's very hard to let go of. You know, it's like sometimes I'll even tell somebody and they can't conceive of letting go of something. Like, how could I not worry about this? How could I not be disturbed? How could I not be upset? And it's like, they can't even picture a reality in which this isn't true. But actually, you have to have faith. You know, that's just delusion. You know, and it doesn't mean it goes away, but it means you're giving yourself the right teaching. And you're trying to learn that I can let go of this. You know, and I don't have to be disturbed by it. And the funny thing is, frequently with the things that people worry about most and fear most, when they happen, often the people are fine. You know? You know, this is a very common experience. The worst thing happens, you know, somebody will dread for years losing their job, and they lose their job, and okay, something goes wrong, and they were okay, and they said, wow. You know, and it's even liberating then, because it's like, God, you know, I was carrying this around all the time, and I realized I didn't have to feel so bound, you know, tie myself in knots about something, which is really what we do in worry. You know, it's even why our guts feel like they're in that expression, you know, your guts are in knots, because you feel it in your guts, you know. And the pressures of life often make us feel like we can't be still. We have to control the circumstances. We have to get them to behave the way we want them to behave. Haven't we all felt that at times? Like, how do I get them to be the way I want them to be? And of course, it would be much better for them. So my impatience is really good. I'm just trying to help them. And it doesn't mean that it wouldn't be helpful for people to be, you know, not to have this problem or not to be this way. But we have to have compassion and realize this is the nature of things. If you look at whatever problem somebody has, the world is full of it. You know, endless beings have it. You know, it's the nature of the human condition. You know, it'd be like, wow, I can't believe he's an alcoholic. Like, wow. You know, it's even why support groups can be useful, because whatever the problem is, endless other people, it's just nice to know, wow, all these people are going through the same thing I am. And it's useful, you know, that support, the fact that there's nothing special about what you're doing. And the pressure of situations due to karma, we often can be overwhelmed by the pressure, feel like we can't sit still, we can't accept this. And again, it's almost like your mind moving in meditation. You just keep trying to bring yourself back to just let me let go. Let me just wholeheartedly be here. Let me not, instead of letting my mind spin off like with, how could they have done that? You know, just like, or one of my favorite lines of Ajahn Chah is always, he said, if you're washing the dishes and complaining about somebody, you're cleaning the wrong thing. You know, just let go of the complaining, and you can just wash the dishes. You know, it's, and of course, getting your mind dirty isn't helpful. You know, you're not gaining any, you're just making yourself suffer. And we get hurt and discouraged often in life just because we actually have the wrong view. We're taking refuge in the wrong thing. You know, just like I was talking, you know, frequently I'll talk to someone, particularly somebody who's really young, and they can't even conceive of not being disturbed by what other people think of them. You know, something often as we get older we get some perspective on, but when you're 20, 18, it's like, how can I get them not to be, how do I get them to like me? And I gotta go, or treat me well, or not be critical of me, or all these things. And I kind of tell them, you have to learn it doesn't matter. But when you're 18, it's, you know, you know, can't even conceive. Reality is what other people think of me is a normal part of being, growing up, you know, that most people go through. And to some extent or other, of being overly sensitive to. Hell, I can still remember often what people thought of something I wore in high school, literally. And I'm so enlightened now. I almost never think about what anybody thinks about what I'm wearing. Or as my brother once looked at me, he said, you're into earth tones. And I wanted to tell him, I'm not into anything. This is just what I am. I'm not really making much choices here in wearing what I'm told to wear, in a way, what our Sangha wears. And in a way, a lot of the practice is getting in touch with a pure intention to really seek something deeper. Because unless you're seeking something, for our life to have meaning, it's not just letting go. Because you can't let go in a vacuum. It won't work. The letting go has to have this positive, deep purpose to it, where what you really want and what the heart is longing for and calling for is there. Because otherwise it's just emptiness and it doesn't, you'll fill it with something. But actually the spiritual purpose can fill it, where actually there's something positive in washing the dishes, or, you know, taking a walk, or, you know, like, you know, having Molly on your lap. You think, wow, something to be grateful for. This being really likes me. You know, but just to have this being. And meditation is actually, in a way, the Buddhist training is learning not to get in the way of that pure intention. You know, so it can come forth and you can get in touch with the fact that this is what your heart longs for. You really do want this. You know, these other things that the heart wants isn't going to work. Like being successful in this way isn't going to make you happy. It may be nice, but, you know, and if you think any like worldly success makes you happy, all you have to do is talk to any of the people who have that worldly success and realize most of the time you wouldn't want any of their lives. You know what I mean? Just think if you met 20 of the most successful writers in America. I'll bet you wouldn't want most of their lives. You know, and that would be true of, you know, rich people, you know, whoever it is. It's probably, you know, just like, you know, I remember hearing accounts of Steve Jobs, and it was like, You wouldn't want to be Steve Jobs. You know, he wasn't, you know, doing well on an individual basis. I mean, he wasn't doing dreadful, but he also wasn't, you know, somebody who was really probably happy and contented with his life. Mm. You know, which isn't unusual. Most people are. But to get in touch with that pure intention, it gets stronger if you cultivate it. Mm. You know, and, you know, that's why we practice. That's why we hear the Dharma. Just like you can walk out of here, and with any luck, you'll feel a little bit more than when you walk in. I mean, that's why you practice over time. It reinforces it, you know, just like hearing the Dharma, you know, which, because probably if most of you think about, well, most of you have been coming, heard lots of my talks, and probably if you really break it down, there may not be anything that you hadn't heard before, if you know what I mean. It's like, wow, that's an original. He just came up with new Dharma. You know, maybe just a different way of explaining something. If you break it down, I actually have heard that before, but it helps to hear it and take it in the same way as it helps us to chant the scriptures to do the whole practice. Because each act of faith actually helps us, and even coming here is an act of faith, helps us cultivate the Buddha-seeking heart. You know, as I'll say in Mahayana, seeking the bodhicitta, seeking the heart of Buddha. And that pure intention allows us to trust ourselves. Because in a way, to doubt yourself is to doubt the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. It's making something about you special. Like there's something wrong with you. But there's nothing wrong with you, it's just karma. You know. And actually, you have the same intention under there as Shakyamuni Buddha. You know, you just have to do a little, you know, you have to kind of uncover that pure intention, which is, you know, what we do when we practice. And over time it'll deepen, because that's what we're doing in our practice, is deepening that. And delusion comes up in that desperate need not to put up with something, to get rid of something, not to accept something. You know, it's like, you know, and that's delusion. It may be wrong, but the nature of reality is there's always good and bad things happening. You know, I can assure you that never once in your life are you going to look at a newspaper and have only good news. Everybody was happy today.
That's a delusion.
You know, and a lot of training is just, can we be still and stop demanding things to be different? It's not wrong to want them to be different or wish them to be different. I mean, it's like the transfer of merit board we have. You know, I wish all these people don't have whatever the problem is, but I'm not demanding they don't have. There's a big difference between I wish all beings to be happy. I hope all of you have as few problems in your life as possible and are as happy as possible. But I can't demand that or even expect that. Mm-hmm. And when you don't have it, often there's something deeper going on, and it can actually not be a bad thing. So very frequently, people actually are grateful for the things that go wrong. You know, and it happens actually very commonly, you know, that people will find, wow, that illness was really helpful. Mm-hmm. That problem was really a positive thing. And it's not an unusual experience, because it helps, you know, when you face, you know, just like actually I even frequently when I'm having a problem with something, it even makes me realize, God, I do have to practice harder. Why is this bothering me? You know, it's pointing something out, and you go through something hard and you realize it was okay when you now realize it. And that it actually helped me let things go and get a better perspective. Because we're suffering, or one of my favorite lines of Ajahn Chah, is when we suffer, we're not suffering due to the difficult conditions. We're suffering from wrong view.
Mm.
And I find that a very useful thing to remind myself whenever I suffer. It's all wrong view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it's how I'm looking at it, and that's making it into suffering. And there's a purification that goes on by just being willing to feel all our deluded feelings, see all our deluded thoughts. And you think, but I shouldn't have deluded thoughts, or this is bad stuff, or I shouldn't be critical, I shouldn't be this. Just to see it, sit still with it, is an aspect of compassion. You're trying to help these deluded thoughts by just being these deluded feelings. Like, I hate that, you know, I'm jealous. It's like somebody said, oh, I'm jealous. And I kind of go, it's fine to be jealous. Just sit still and don't tell yourself that, don't reinforce it by saying how, you know, how this is a real thing, but just say, oh, this is my delusion that I think I'm thinking this. And have compassion for that, and it'll start dissolving if you're willing to let it. You know, just like a lot of people, you know, most of us in this room aren't that young anymore, and you know, as I look around this room, and you know, there aren't any teenagers here, so you know, you've learned that a lot of aging isn't bad. Often, you know, it's like when you're young, you think, oh, you know, kind of, you know, and kind of you realize, oh, that really doesn't bind you in the way when you're young you think it had to. You know, but on the other hand, if you get caught up in how you want to be, it's almost like, you know, when I've met people who are, you know, took a lot of refuge in their youth and their appearance, then they can get mighty depressed that, you know, and you realize maybe it wasn't so good that they had it, you know, had that good fortune then, because it just created suffering later on when they have to spend most of their life, you know, as I remember somebody who did okay with it, but she just commented, nobody notices me anymore. She used to walk through a room or walk anywhere and everyone noticed her, because she was, you know, had that karma of, you know, being, you know, you know, extremely attractive, and now she says nobody notices me at all, and she was okay with it. She just commented, you know, it wasn't a big deal to her, but still, it niggled, you know, it just, it comes up, and she'll feel it at times, like, oh, I used to, you know, oh, you know, kind of, you know, walk in a room and everyone was paying attention to me.
It's like this Italian, beautiful Italian actress who was once asked by a newspaper person, he says, what do you attribute to your beauty as an Italian actress? She says, pasta.
Well, I remember hearing an interview with this very, at the time, one of the most biggest models and the most popular models, and they ask her, what do you attribute your great success to? With this very serious look, she says, oh, it's all due to my inner beauty. Oh, and then she just started to crack up. And basically said it's all symmetry.
Yeah, really.
You know, she just said all her proportions, if you make, everything was in the perfect proportions. Her face, you know, you do, and she says it's all symmetry. Mm. You know, and, you know, it's no big deal. You know, it's like she had, you know, the eyes, you know, everything was exactly as, you know, if you had to do the ideal thing, it was almost all that way. You know, the same thing with her figure, you know, almost the ideal proportions of everything. And, you know, she said, I had nothing to do with it. I'm just...
like a Barbie doll.
Yeah.
Yeah, but most of us are like asymmetrical.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You know, it's... But the more we... And it's like taking just the teaching of anitta, no self, the teaching of anicca, change, into our hearts. Like, we're not making, we're trying to see how we make the self. And we can't have the pure intention and keep building the self. the two get in the way, because if you're going to, just like, think of how much energy we put in protecting the self. Like, wow, what that person said damages me. How does somebody damage you by what they say? But people can feel like that comment, you know, it's like, I remember talking to somebody and they felt like they were damaged by somebody else's criticism, and I kind of go, nothing's damaged. But if you have enough self, you'll feel damaged by someone else's opinion of you. And just to see change that, even if you get it, it's going to go away. You know, and to see, you know, everything washes away and will wash away and doesn't have the significance we give it. If it goes wrong, both the successes and failures, you know, are going to be forgotten very soon. You know what I mean? Nobody will remember, you know, in fact, nobody will remember us in a very short time. You know, we'll just be, you know, and that's, nothing's wrong with that. You know, that, you know, the fact that we're incredibly insignificant is an obvious truth to everybody but a few people we're close to. You know, and anyway, anybody have any comments as I'm talking on here in this large group? Somebody can still say something if they wish.
Reverend Kinnery, I just want to say that I've been a social worker for 30 years and a teacher for 7, and I read a ton of mystery novels, so my goal in life seems to be problem solving. And so as you're talking, my mind is going, how do you let go? How do you have the training to not be the problem solver? How do you do the training to have a different view? How do you do the training? How am I going to get on that other page or move in that direction? Just be quiet long enough to change it. Because as I get older, I just see more and more things for me to solve. And my personal life seems to be of that. So I'm listening to you, and I'm really willing to move in a direction of a new view. And how to do it doesn't come. And training is one thing, doing it is for me another. It seems to be dichotomy. So, am I saying something that you hear?
Yeah, no, what you're saying, Gwen, is really common. But the trick isn't that there's a problem with solving problems any more than, you know, that's normal life that we want. Difficulties we want to deal with, conditions we want to get better. In fact, if I really think about it, what I'm doing most of the time is just trying to get things as good as I can get them. You know, I mean, get the conditions of the, like, the temple running as well as I can, the details as good as they can, my own stuff as good as it can, my health as good as it can. And there's, you know, if I have a health problem, can I solve it? So it's not that there's a problem in that we're trying to do essentially good, like usually solving a problem is good, but to accept in a way that it's okay, but not demanding a solution, not demanding, just like saying if I have a health problem, I have to learn not to demand that it go away, just try to do what I can to have it go away, but accept that it's okay if it stays. Yeah. And there's, so it's a softening, it's not the wish, like I'll have the wish for people to do well, and if I can help them, let's say, suffer less, you know, that sounds like a good thing to do, but I can't demand it or require it, and I have to accept that if it falls apart or it doesn't work, and if I can't solve it, that's just the nature of things. So there'll always be a lot of problems I can't solve. And unlike mystery novels, mystery novels aren't very satisfying if they don't have a solution at the end. If they end and you still don't know anything, you're not going to be a popular mystery writer. And on the other hand, you know, I can, you know, like, you know, there's, I mean, just like for a message to you, like watching Perry Mason, you know, And at the end of it, somebody always, I did it. Somebody confesses at the end of every show. And
Reverend Kennedy, it just seems part of the struggle is just to accept ourselves for how we are.
Yeah.
And then see the pain or see whatever, but being willing to put up with it and bear it and not think it'll ever change. If it stays the same, I mean, then we have to be able to cope with the and it's the attitude we're trying, mm-hmm. I mean, it's the accepting it, right?
Yeah, and it's actually good that to say, not to say if it, all things will change,
yes,
so
yes,
that's part of the Dharma. It's nothing is, so it will wash away. It's just not defining when. You know, and from a Buddhist point of view, it could, you know, it may not happen in this lifetime, and that's fine. It's like, I'll shockingly tell you all something. Probably, there's a great probability that you may not reach full enlightenment before you die.
And if you have, leave.
Well, actually, if you have, I really appreciate you giving a talk. I could use that teaching. So, you know, you can help us all if you do that. But on the other hand, just to accept where you are and not, and to remind yourself it's okay whatever the difficulty is. You know, there's nothing wrong the fact that you're finding something incredibly hard or difficult or the problem keeps coming up and you can identify with it. Well, this is who I am, and that's the delusion. Because things will, they're not who you are, they're just strong patterns. And sometimes I've been through our whole lives. It's like whenever I have a problem, like, you know, something comes up, I make a mistake. If I really look, in some way or other, I've been making that mistake my whole life in various forms. You know, it's like, wow, this is a new greed. No, it's a variation on the greed that, you know, it's like, it's not the first time I've had too much pizza. Or the first time I got caught up in somebody complimenting me or insulting me, you know, being upset with me or thinking, oh, I'm wonderful, you know what I mean? Even though I only hear the wonderful part. No, I'm kidding.
So,
yeah,
I want to go back to the 18-year-old and find out what you would say to him or to her about view. And do you remember you were saying how they're concerned about, do I look okay or do I get a nose ring? Or, you know? And so how would you express to them a good way to live?
I think just whatever part of the Dharma they're willing to hear. You know what I mean? It's hard to know. It's truthfully true of everyone. It's like hard to know when somebody's has a view, how to get through them. And what, and you know, in Buddhism they call skillful means is what it is. So I was just telling them it's not, you know, to stop paying so much attention. Like in that case, I was telling the person, you can't get people to view you the way you want to be viewed. You know, you have to really let go of that and just accept that some people will have, you know, are going to look poorly at you the same way as, you know, like when you go to high school, that you won't, there'll be kids who always look down on you. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? It's not like you're not the cool, you know, like, you know, kind of the cool, you know, you're not always, you know, almost all of us have it where you're not, you know, at the very top of the high school food chain. And they're suffering with that. I remember once talking, or it may not happen. Would have been there. It was a tea where we're talking about, most of us were talking about how hard it was growing up and being in high school, you know, those years. And somebody said, oh, those were the best years of my life. And we'd kind of go, because they were the top of the high school food chain. You know, he was the football hero. He was good looking. He was the best athlete in his high school. He probably had his pick of whatever. Whoever he, you know, whatever high school girl, most of them would have wanted to be with him, and he's never been, you know, he went to college and he couldn't even make the team, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He wasn't, he suddenly didn't have a world in which he was at the top of, yeah, you know, special anymore. Yeah. And it's just interesting. I thought, oh, you know, that wasn't such good karma. Mm-hmm. You know, at the time you think, oh, everyone would have envied him. But then mm-hmm. you think, oh, the you know, then you're 19 years old and the best years of your life are all in.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, that was my peak and now it's been...
Downhill.
You know, and so it's... But what it is, it's every case is different. It's even like when I talk to somebody, how do you get through to them? And it's like, you know, how do you not be worried about something or afraid? Or it's not any different with high school. It's just what can you say and have sympathy? Because sometimes all you can do is have sympathy for the person because there isn't anything you can say that'll make them look at it different. You just go, you know, wow, this is rough. It's rough being 16 years old and not fitting in, for instance, and there's no way I can tell them, oh, don't care what they think of you because it's not realistic.
Yeah.
What do you know?
Right. At that age,
You know, and it's, you know, and the wholeness we really look at, want, you know, and so that. I always like the fact that holiness comes from the word whole. Mm-hmm. And we all want this whole. And one of the things about training is by letting things go and being open to what's on, there's a wholeness there because in whatever we're doing is part of the path. You know, nothing's in the way. Nothing is apart from our practice, apart from the life of Buddha. And there's a wholeness that, and we'll see it when it's not, like, this isn't the part I want, this isn't what I want. You know, and then we're cutting our life up into bits and saying, I want this bit, don't want that bit. You know, and, you know, so the wholeness comes from embracing it, and when we stop judging, criticizing, clinging, fear, you know, and fearing, then there's a wholeness and a feeling of completeness that we can experience. Because we're not cutting things into pieces. And it's sort of what we do on, if you think about it, in a way, that wholeness most of you have experienced on retreat. You know, like, there's a wholeness in, because you don't control the day, you're just doing stuff. And you're usually, because it's a retreat, you're doing it wholeheartedly. Some of the time, not always, but, you know, we're human, so sometimes you think, I don't want to be here, or like, when's this going to end, or all the rest. But a lot of the time, you know, there's a wholeness to just, you know, people will almost say, you know, kind of say that, how come I can't do that when I go home, you know what I mean? Because I don't get this wholeness in my life when I have to stop cutting things into pieces. Due to the way you relate to it, it's like, oh, my work suddenly consumes me, or my this consumes me, or that consumes me, that very word consume. But there's a wholeness when you don't do that, you know, and you when you just wholeheartedly embrace what's there, there's a peace and a joy and a wholeness, completeness that's there, you know, that you experience. And then, you know, usually you walk away and after a while, your karma reasserts itself, and you feel like, oh, you know, like people will say, well, how can I keep this feeling when I'm not on retreat? You know, and it's like, and that's the training, because it's an artificial thing to suddenly have it where all you have to do is this schedule somebody else gives you, and, you know, you don't have to deal with anything. You can just, you know, okay, now I vacuum. And that's it. And I even have to stop when they tell me to stop, you know. And you can even see the clinging when, can I finish the floor? You know, and you know, can I finish this? And you go, no, no. You have to now drop it and just go to the next thing. And there was a teaching in that, but in a way we can learn to do that by realizing whatever we're doing is not really that important, which is the right view. We're making it important, and sometimes I realize, you know, like if I, you know, it's almost like I remember when I've gotten sick and I realize I'm supposed to do something, and I realize It's amazing. The world will get by without me doing it. Just like if I was sick and missed this today, the world would get by. You know, nothing would have happened. It just, you know, I just wouldn't give a Dharma talk, let's say. And, wow. So what? You know, it would have been okay, or I wouldn't be there or something, or just because it's not whatever it is, you know, or just like something went wrong and it was really bothering me, and I realized it's just money.
Yeah.
When you break it down, just why am I being bothered by it? It's just some money. It's not like it's going to prevent me from eating. You know, it's like I'm not going to really suffer, you know, from it. It just bothers me that we have to spend this money.
Yeah.
And it's not like it on a practical level it makes a difference. It's just wow. I didn't want to spend this money. And often it's like, this is what you have to, you know, it's straightforward. This is what you're going to spend the money on. Yeah. You know, suddenly you have to do it. Anyway, it's probably about time for me to stop. Let me stop. Stop my... Stop. Stop. Wasn't it?